Donald Trump last week became the first ever former or sitting president to face federal criminal charges over his alleged misuse of federal documents and obstruction of an investigation into those documents. Trump made his first appearance in the case in a Miami courtroom earlier today. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this first criminal case against an American president? How do you feel about federal officials' investigation into Trump's withholding of classified documents? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me again.
Can you bring us through the process that led up to these indictments, the appointment of a special counsel, the grand jury? What got us here?
What got us here was a discovery sometime after Donald Trump left office, when it was discovered that there were documents at the Mar-a-Lago that potentially needed to be returned. At least at that stage, there were concerns about whether classified or top secret materials. And the Justice Department contacted Donald Trump, contacted his attorneys and said, we believe there are some documents there that you're no longer entitled to hold, or they're in an unsecured place. And that really was the start of a back and forth conversation, at least according to the criminal indictment that we had filed against Donald Trump, that really starts back in 2021, that obviously has, at least for now, culminated in the indictment and the arraignment today. But what appears to have happened over about a two-year period is that there were numerous requests, allegedly requests to Donald Trump and his attorneys for certain documents. At some point, there was denial that there were any documents. At some point, some documents were returned. There was eventually a search warrant of the Mar-a-Lago to try to retrieve others. So this has been part of a ongoing, let us say, investigation and dialogue, again, of which really starts up not too far after he had left office, and really surrounds both the fact that or as the allegations are, that he's not authorized to have these documents, and these documents, which in some cases are sensitive or top secret materials, are in an unsecured location, unapproved by the Defense and Justice Department.
Let's talk about whether Trump was supposed to have these documents. I want to give a listen to former Trump administration Attorney General Bill Barr speaking about that on Fox News back on Sunday.
He was totally wrong that he had the right to have those documents. Those documents are among the most sensitive secrets that the country has. They have to be in the custody of the archivist. He had no right to maintain them and retain them. And he kept them in a way at Mar-a-Lago that anyone who really cares about national security, their stomach would churn at it.
Can you talk about what former Attorney General Barr had to say there? These things aren't supposed to be out of federal custody, in effect.
You're absolutely correct. Is that while as President of the United States, Donald Trump was entitled to see these documents, he may have even been entitled to declassify them, although there's some debate, you know, on that issue, but we won't get into that here. But he had access to them. But once you leave office, you no longer are entitled to these government documents. Personal papers, perhaps, yes. But government documents, no, especially documents that are classified as, again, confidential, secret, top secret. But it certainly doesn't matter. These are the property of the United States government. So that's one broad issue. The second broad issue is about where they were kept. This is what Bob Barr, Attorney General Barr, was talking about, is the sense that once, if these are materials that are classified or confidential, they have to be stored in an appropriate location that is secure against anybody just sort of walking in, grabbing them, seeing them. One of the worst nightmares that, let us say, the Defense Department can have is not knowing who has seen perhaps battle plans or who has seen top secret information, in effect, not knowing who knows what that we don't know about. And so that's what Barr was talking about here. It's both, not only was the president, as an ex-president, no longer entitled to have these documents, but two, even if, just for the sake of argument, even if he were entitled to do so, he had them in an unsecure, unapproved location at the Mar-a-Lago.
Since this first became a story, we had former Vice President Pence reveal that he had some documents he wasn't supposed to. He volunteered that info, returned them. Now President Biden, from his term as vice president, also had some. He volunteered that info, brought in people for a search. There have been questions about, okay, why is Donald Trump being indicted, not those two? And one key thing here seems to be the word willfully in the relevant law. Do you have these documents on purpose? Are you, are you concealing them from the federal government? Can you compare and contrast the Trump case versus the Biden and Pence cases?
Sure. For first, let's just start with a basic premise here that to convict somebody of a crime, you not only have to show factually they did something, but you have to show intent. You have to show perhaps willful or deliberate, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of a general proposition of American law. But specifically, let's look at one of the laws he's being charged with, which is part of the Espionage Act. And it's the willful retention of national defense information. And the emphasis is upon willful here, because unlike Biden, unlike Pence, when it was discovered that they had the material by accident, they had this, they fully cooperated with the FBI. They turned over materials. They did not impede in any way the investigation or the return of the materials. The criminal indictment against Donald Trump basically says this is willful, also pointing to the fact, which is why there's also charges of conspiracy to obstruct justice. They're showing that what? That he made a choice to do so. And additionally, the law says not only do you have to make a willful choice, but it's also documents in a unsecure, unapproved location. And many of us have seen those pictures in the last few days of what? Boxes stacked up, and was it like bathrooms and stuff like that? But that's a really important distinction to understand here. It's about the intention. And if, again, if the criminal complaint is correct in terms of them laying out at least preliminarily some of the evidence, it's clear that Donald Trump, again, according to the indictment, knew that he was not supposed to have these documents. And in fact, some of the most damning evidence against him is from his former attorneys, who where he tried to get him to, again, allegedly to lie or to deny there were documents or say there was no more. So that's a critical difference, what he did in terms of once the documents were discovered.
Talking to David Schultz with Hamline University and the University of Minnesota Law School, looking at the indictments against former President Donald Trump in this federal case over executive branch documents. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Former President Trump, David, has said, hey, this is political. This is a Democratic administration targeting a Republican predecessor and future Republican competitor in the next election, potentially. How do you see the chain of command? Is it insulated enough from political interference to defend against charges from the former president and supporters in Congress?
Two responses to that. First, that this was insulated, where apparently Joe Biden had no involvement in this. This was what? Something decided by the Justice Department, but more importantly, by careerists who are in the Justice Department who are prosecutors. So this was fairly insulated. But second, if this had been anybody else except for an ex-president who had material such as this, perhaps maybe a Julian Assange or somebody else, this would be treated equally as seriously in terms of the fact that what we have secret information, documents about U.S. security, about defense policy, out and disclosed by unauthorized persons in an unauthorized locations. And again, we've seen over the last few years stories about that. Again, Julian Assange, Chelsea Manning. We have a recent story also, I'm forgetting the name of the person off the top of my head, who was charged with disclosure of military secrets. So ordinary people would be treated just as harshly as this.
Talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University of Law at the University of Minnesota, looking at the federal indictment of former President Trump over the alleged willful possession of classified documents and alleged obstruction of the investigation into those documents. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the charges against the former president? What questions do you have? What do you hope comes out of this? What do you fear comes out of this? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with University of Minnesota Law Professor David Schultz about the federal indictments of former President Donald Trump over his handling of secret documents. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the process here, the charges against the former president, what happens next, and what do you think about these indictments? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. David, we had the former president appear in this federal court in Miami today, pleading not guilty to the charges. What happens next?
Well, what happens next at this point is a little bit of what was happening today. Besides the plea at this point, there was probably some, again, we didn't have a lot of information about what happened in court. There was probably some original scheduling orders. And what I mean by scheduling orders is that the judge and the attorneys have to agree to a variety of different things at this point, agree to things like depositions, exchanging of evidence, timelines on a whole bunch of different things. But what we can probably look forward to seeing over the next few weeks will be the Trump attorneys trying to get the charges dismissed, maybe trying to get some evidence thrown out. And then we should be thinking about very shortly, probably a trial date is going to be set. And the federal prosecutors would like to have a sooner as opposed to a later prosecutor or a trial date. Perhaps Trump might want to push it out, maybe push it out till after the election. But assuming for the sake of argument, the trial occurs when I think it's going to occur. And I say, I think, we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. It would be approximately, let's say, 12, 13 months out. If my counting is correct at this point, we could very well see this trial take place sometime in July or August of 2024, maybe a little bit later, which would put us at the tail end of the primaries around the time of the Republican convention, or depending on exactly the location of time, maybe as the general election is starting at this point. So this is going to be a trial that's going to be dead center into the 2024 presidential election cycle.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Milwaukee. Jeff, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, Jeff?
Yes, I was curious. I look at some of my friends who are Trump supporters, and they make the claim that, well, this is a two-tiered system of justice. To be fair, if you look at the former case with Secretary Hillary Clinton, she was in possession of government documents, of which were destroyed with, I believe, was a bleach bit software to in effort to clean the servers, and destruction of government property in the forms of BlackBerries and the cell phones with those government documents on them. I mean, he has a point. Is there a two-tiered system of justice?
Jeff, thanks for the call. David, I brought up the Pence and Biden examples as a little closer. These are all items that were on servers. The Hillary Clinton case, though, our caller wondering why wasn't she ultimately charged in that?
Well, there does seem to be evidence that she was cooperating, that again, it wasn't in the same kind of, let's say, willful way that Donald Trump is being charged. And for her, I will concede and say there were some problems there. There were some problems at the end of the day in terms of questions that may have never been resolved. However, having said that, you know, even if she should have been charged but was not, the fact of the matter is that the Justice Department here has evidence of what they believe is a crime and are prosecuting in this case. And you can't really sort of make the argument and say other people weren't prosecuted for doing something wrong, and therefore I shouldn't be prosecuted.
Thanks for the call. Carly joins us now in Kewaunee. Carly, hello.
Hi, hello.
What did you want to bring up, Carly?
Well, kind of going off of what Jeff was just saying, but, you know, like when Trump says that this is all, you know, a conspiracy and we're out to get him, you know, and I have people that, and then obviously the people that support him want to repeat that, and they believe it, and they think that this is all just a witch hunt and blah, blah, blah. But there's the whole justice system. How do you explain that means that everyone who put together the indictments and got the jury and the judges and all the people, like people, do they imagine them sitting around going, yes, we're all on the same page. We'd like to take him down, even though this is wrong. How can we explain to say that there is literal evidence? And if people, we've seen how up in arms people got about her emails, you would think people would have tried to get her an indictment. There's probably people that tried to get her indicted and they couldn't because there was no evidence to do so.
Carly, thanks a lot for the call. I think Carly getting David to confidence in the system that led to these indictments.
I think she makes a good point here, but again, I'll come back and make the argument and say that if we read the criminal complaint, if we read what appears to be the evidence right now, Trump knew he was not supposed to be in possession of these documents, obstructed the FBI and the Justice Department effort to do an investigation, obstructed them in terms of trying to get documents returned. They had to get a search warrant to go get these documents, even after he said they didn't exist. And if you look at, again, the criminal indictment, it appears that he tried to get his attorneys to lie about all of this stuff. Granted, we have a presumption of innocence until proven guilty. But the fact that there seems to be that he did have documents that he was not entitled to possess. He had documents in a location that was not authorized to hold those documents. We do have evidence of an underlying crime here that eventually a jury is going to have to decide if he's guilty. But that's how I think the Justice Department would respond, is to say it's not a witch hunt. There is a basis. Had the president or ex-president returned all these documents, had he not done all these different things, we wouldn't have an indictment now. The Justice Department's argument would be to say that Trump brought these problems on himself, much in the same way that Attorney General Barr made those comments, I think, this past Sunday on national television.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Marianne now in Kirtle. Marianne, hi.
Hi. I just have one comment. I read the entire indictment, and I suggest that everybody do the same, first of all. Second of all, three lawyers, all Trump lawyers, and two employees of Donald Trump rolled on him, and basically he was playing hide-and-go-seek with 80 boxes of documents that were everything from needing a special place to even view them all the way down to confidential. So how dare he plead not guilty? And that's my comment.
Marianne, thanks for the call. And yeah, reading the indictment, David, there's a lot of movement of these documents, sometimes concealed, mm-hmm. according to the indictment, concealed from some of Trump's own lawyers before they got a look at them. How important do you think that series of evidence of that hide and seek, as Marianne says, will be in this case?
I think it's going to be very critical. I think also what's going to be critical is going to be the potential testimony of his former attorneys, where there appears to be notes and conversations where he's telling them at some point, what if we just say that no documents exist? Or tell them we've returned them all and so forth like that. And that's going to be important, because that information, his conversations with his attorneys, are going to be allowed into court, or potentially allowed into court. And that becomes some of the strongest evidence, as well as the fact, as the caller pointed out, that documents were moved around in what appears to be an evidence to either obstruct justice or hide the documents from the FBI or the Justice Department.
Thanks for that call. In our last minute and a half or so, David, the judge who will preside over this case, at least currently planned Judge Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee, which doesn't always mean much. She was viewed as being sympathetic to the former president in early stages of this investigation. Your thoughts on Judge Cannon and this case?
Well, it may be at least initially good for the Justice Department to have perhaps a Trump appointee, because it's going to be a little bit harder for Donald Trump to claim she's biased, that she is out to get him when he appointed her. And in an earlier ruling, she was ruling in his favor. Now, how this plays out going down the line, I don't know, because again, we know that she was overturned, by a higher level of courts on some other issues down the line here. But it's going to be interesting to see how a Trump appointee handles this case going forward. I'm not expecting at this point to see either side ask her to recuse herself, take herself off the case. But I wouldn't rule that out as a possibility down the line, but I think it's a remote one.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
My pleasure, and thank you for the callers.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He joined us for a look at the federal charges against former President Trump over his possession of classified documents. Trump appeared in a federal court in Miami earlier today, kicking off this process. You can keep sharing your thoughts and follow the story online on the Ideas Network Facebook page, and we'll have reporting from our colleagues at NPR online at WPR.org.